As a lead into the sermon, I would like to read this letter. This comes from us over the email, and it begins by stating this. It says, since this is the only day we are waiting for, and the only day we can see our favorite program, Armor of God, we were kind of disappointed to see that they had trouble broadcasting it. We were waiting on a replay time, but they did not show it. It says, do you know by any chance when this could be? They say, I hope so. Please be so kind and let us know. We would like to get the booklet, The Great Day of the Lord, and also the tape, The Perfect Storm. I want to use that as a lead into the sermon today in this context. That tomorrow morning, the program, The Armor of God, will be, as you all know, presented in a variety of stations across the country. East Coast, West Coast, Canada. And who knows where else it might be aired by our ambitious members who have a copy of it and who might have local access. But the point is it is being aired in various parts of our community, our country. What I have wondered about are the hundreds, if not thousands, of people that on Sunday morning are going to be sitting at their television set with that little remote control and just clicking along and hear all these stations. And on Sunday morning, as you all know, there's quite a variety of religious programming available. And they're going to be clicking across there, and then all of a sudden, they may see us. The question is, how long do they see the armor of God? Do we get their attention, or do they just boop, 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 right along the line? I don't have the answer to that, except it dawns on me that for some reason, that's probably explainable with the text that we will see today, some will click on it and hold on it and watch it, and watch the whole program, and then want to see it again next week and the following week, just as we were communicated in this email letter. And I got to thinking about that, about how quickly that opportunity goes by. Just, do any of you ever use a remote control at home? I do. I use it quite frequently. And I can just go right down the line, and then sometimes I'll stop on a program, sometimes I won't. Just, boy, that's not very long. Boy, what an opportunity. What a chance. And then it's gone. I hope and pray and ask all of you to join us in that prayer that more will stop by for a visit with the armor of God and God will lead them to respond. When we consider what we've been called to do as a work, it's rather overwhelming and it's humbling to recognize that we are all being used as tools, be it our prayers, our support, our tithes, our offerings, preaching and teaching, whatever it is that we're doing, to make a difference in the lives of those who are blind, those who do not see the truth. I'm talking to an audience today that understands a great deal of the truth. But I will be the first to tell you, I don't know all the truth. Do you? I'd like to think that I know a lot about the truth, but I confess I don't know all the truth. There are just some places in Scripture that are a little bit vague and uncertain to me. I want to know a little bit more. There's a story in the Bible. It's actually just a few verses, and it's one that we don't read too often, and it's a startling example of what can happen in the life of an individual. I'd like you to turn there with me, if you will, over to Mark. Mark, a book that deals with so many, especially in the earlier chapters. If you were to take the time to study the book or the Gospel of Mark, beginning in chapter 1 up to chapter 10, you would find that this particular book has a heavy emphasis on healings, dramatic healings. Now, this past week, Mr. Stinson and I, because of what we were involved in, we were dealing or talking a great deal about healings. And, you know, healings are pretty important. And I think today about our lovely member who's not with us and she's struggling with health, Anita Kitchens. You know, I miss her. She normally sits right back there, you know. And I hope Anita's doing okay. She needs a big miracle in her life. How about a small one? She would tell you that she's had small miracles, knowing her the way we do. She's such an anchor to our congregation. But we need a miracle on her behalf because she's dealing with a life and death issue in her life. So is this example that we're going to be looking at here in just a moment in Mark chapter 10. And as we turn there, I want to ask you, if you needed a miracle, what would you ask for? I'll just look right out at the audience today and out to the tape that's viewing us. Audience there, what would you ask for today? What if you had that old one wish, what would it be? So if I were to ask you, okay, you tell me what you want the most today, what would you say? Do you have an answer? It's interesting. I imagine we could pass out a survey and have each one of you write down what you want. I think that would be fascinating to know your answer. Some of you might say, well, what I would like to do, my single most important wish is I would like my mate to be brought into the church. That seems reasonable. Some would say, I want to be delivered from work problems on the Sabbath. That's possible. Some might say, I want a new car. or I'd like to win. Who knows what it is? The variety of requests that would come to us would astound us. And yet the reason why I emphasize that is it's not very much unlike what we see with the disciples as they were able to do that very thing with Jesus Christ. Maybe, if you will, just hold here in Mark 10 and just come over just a couple pages with me to Mark's account, I believe it is. Yes, Mark chapter 9, just one page over. And let's take a look at what it says here. This is involving the disciples, John and James, as I recall, we'll see here. And it begins in verse 38. And John answered him, saying, Master, we saw one casting out devils in thy name, and he followed not us, and we forbade him because he followed us not. Now, that's not the place I want. I'm sorry, that's not it. It must be in chapter 8. Let me find that for you because that's pretty specific. I'll come to that. I'm not going to give up on finding it. The question that is asked of Jesus by the disciples is, what would you that I should do for you? That is the question that's asked. I'll come to it here in my notes. I got ahead of myself just a little bit. But let me just key off of that as I'll come to it here in a moment, I'm sure. What is it that if Jesus were to ask you the one thing that he could give to you, what would it be? And I'm serious about that. What would it be? Would it be good health? What if you're not in bad health? You probably wouldn't ask for that. If you're struggling financially, probably something financially. If you're having difficulties in your marriage, probably would it be that? Maybe you're not married and you would ask that God would grant you a mate. That happens oftentimes in our prayer sessions. People ask us, well, would you pray that God would provide me a mate? Things like this. What I am struck by here in the account in Mark chapter 10, if you'll notice with me in verse 35, oh, that's the account I wanted. Oh, it was right there all along. I'm sorry, I was there. There it is, Mark chapter 10. Let me come back to that. I apologize for that. But here is James and John, and I want you to notice what these two disciples, honorable disciples, I want you to see the interaction that they had with Jesus. They were the sons of Zebedee. They came to him saying, Master, we would that you should do for us whatsoever we ask of you. That's quite a bold statement, isn't it? We're coming to you to ask you to do for us whatever we want you to do. And he says to them, here's that question, what is it that you want me to do for you? Boy, that's a loaded question, isn't it? There it is. I repeat, what is it that you would ask? And before I'm done today, and we leave this service, there is one thing I'm going to ask of every one of you. I'm asking it of you to do. And you will not have any question what it is that I'm asking. And do it, please. Because it's vitally important to our church, and especially our members, and I think it also pleases God. And I'll share that with you in just a moment. So he says, what is it that you would that I should give to you? And they said to him, now here it is in verse 37, their particular circumstances. They said to him, grant unto us that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left hand. Now we talk about that a great deal. What an unbelievable request. Let us sit on your right hand. Let us sit on your left hand. And Jesus said to them, we'll just stop with his statement. He says, you don't know what you're asking. You don't know what you're asking. Now, come over to verse 46 of the same chapter. This is the story of an individual whose name is Bartimaeus. And he's quite out of sorts. He's not so much unlike many of us in various stages of our life. And I want you to look at what he asked for in his life. This man is a blind man. Let me just state that right up front. And I was wondering what it would be like to ask of Christ what he did and to be given that request. I was reading a story that was true, and these kinds of things tend to inspire me. because it involves a gentleman who had been without sight for so many years, and then complete unexpectedly something happened which allowed him to be healed. His name, well, it's a Spanish name. His name was Sanchez Medgallion, if I got that right. Rick helped me out with that a little bit earlier today. What it was is, as a youngster, he had been working. He lived in Spain, and he had been working like so many others, and he was involved in an industrial accident. An industrial accident caused his eyes to go blind, got the chemicals in his eyes. But even in spite of that, he apparently was able to marry and have children and have grandchildren, but the years were slipping by, year after year after year. But finally, when he was 78 years old, someone approached him about an operation to his eyes, that he could have a cornea put over the lens of the eye, much like you would the crystal on a watch, you know, that covers a watch. It fits over that way, and many of us use contacts, so we are familiar with it. But he couldn't have contacts like the average person could, because they're chemical, they're plastic, and it would interact with his, what, decades-old injury, and he wouldn't be able to see them or to use them. They would be rejected. So one thing led to the other, and they came up with a special cornea that could be inserted into his eyes, and they inserted it in there. And what I liked about this story is what happened. You know, you think about what you would want. For the first time, he was able to see four of his nine children. When I read that, that bothered me. Four of his nine children, it tells me that either the other five had died in the years, or maybe the five didn't live close by. But aside from that, he was able to see four of his nine children, and he was able to see all 22 of his grandkids. So that means maybe they were all there, but five of the parents had died. But you know what was interesting? For the first time ever, he was able to look into his wife's face. He was able to see his wife, first time. Now, she had seen him all these years. She looked into his face, and he looked into hers. But what was quite unsettling was is when he looked into the mirror and saw himself for the first time after all these years. Quote, he says, I thought I would look better. That's what we all that's what we say every morning. But he said, I thought I would look better. That's what it was reported in the newspaper. He said, 78 years old, he said, I look really ugly and old. But his wife disagreed. And here's what his wife said. She said, he's more handsome and he's friendlier. That's what she said about him. He's friendlier and he's more handsome. And it showed how she looked at him and how he looked at himself. And yet I favor her way of doing it, don't you? Now, I bring that example to you because it ties in with a little bit about what I'm talking about today. And that is that this one request that we're going to be talking about here is very similar to what happened to this man, and he was able to see. We're going to be able to see then Bartimaeus here in verse 46, if you'll read through this with me. Because in this I see a need. I see a need in our church. I see it in my personal life. And I'm going to ask you collectively and individually, at least for a while, because I know how things get old, to do it. Verse 46. And as they came to Jericho, and as he went out of Jericho with his disciples and a great multitude of people, there was a blind man, Bartimaeus, who was there. Bartimaeus, I believe it is. Betsy and I were talking about so many different ways to pronounce this, but I think it is actually pronounced Bartimaeus. He was there. And what I want you to understand is the city of Jericho was not all that very far away from Jerusalem. And apparently Jesus and his disciples and his followers were coming out of Jericho. And on the way out, as had been the custom who knows how many days in a row, there were a collection of people, paupers, beggars. Bartimaeus was one of those. It tells who he was, the son of Timaeus. He sat by the highway and he was doing what he had done every single day of his life. He was begging. Now let's talk about this man for just a moment. I want you to try to understand him. I want to try to read between the lines just a moment or two. What would it have been like to have been a beggar? Just think about that for a moment. I don't know if he was married or not. I doubt it. The reason why I doubt that is I don't see any reference to his family. I don't see his family members close by. He was blind, we know that, so he was sightless. It tells us that he is known as blind Bartimaeus. That's how he's known. That's his nickname. He's old blind Bartimaeus. Well, there's not much honor in that, is there? It goes on to tell us here that as we consider it, that his business then was what? How did he make his living? He was a beggar. And as we see it portrayed here, apparently he was outside the city and he had his garment out in front of him, a garment, sitting in front of him, apparently hoping that people would see his situation and throw something, maybe food, maybe money, some item to him so that he could exist. And it was not uncommon in the Middle East and in Jesus' day for beggars to be very, very plentiful. My question to you is why did this man get so much attention? Why? What about all the other hundreds, if not thousands? Why this one? He was helpless. And there's no evidence here that his friends cared for him at all. It was impossible for him to do anything because he just couldn't see. And as you see here, we get the impression that he was very unpopular. You know, they even yelled at him, as we'll see here, when he cried out to Jesus. So let's talk about what he needed. Just consider it a moment. What did this man need? Well, he needed his sight. But what did he need? He needed food. He needed clothing. He needed friends. He needed a home. He needed everything that anyone could demand or want to get out of being a beggar. But you know what he wanted more than all that? He wanted his eyesight. Now just think about that, because just remember, it's just this page over. We already read this in Mark chapter 10, that the disciples, those who were in the know, James and John, they asked for what? Well, what we want most of all is we want you to put us on the right hand and on your left hand. And yet one page over, we have a blind man who's a beggar. And what does he ask for? He asked for his sight. Now, notice in verse 47, as the story continues along, it says that when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, and my question is, how would he have known that it was Jesus of Nazareth? Probably because what would have been very sharp? Just think about that for a moment. When you don't see, what has been proven over time is probably very sharp. Your hearing, and probably the other, senses, probably taste, I don't know, but certainly his hearing was, because he might have overheard, must have overheard, that this Jesus of Nazareth is coming, and guess what he began to do? And the way I look at this is that he seized the moment, that moment. How quickly did that pass? Well, I'm reminded of that remote just about that quickly. I mean, how long does it take? Of course, with Jesus walking by, you know, if we were to walk by, it would take just a little bit longer than the flick of a remote control, wouldn't it? But that's not very long, just to walk by. I can walk by you pretty quickly. I'll tell you something. He had just a moment to seize that opportunity or forever lose it. And he was just a blind man, listening. And it says then that he began to cry out. In other words, he didn't just sit still and do nothing. He cried out, and this tells us what he cried out. He said, "Jesus, Thou Son of David, have mercy on me." So here he is, he's seated, I don't know whether to the right or the left. Jesus is walking by with all the followers and the disciples, and he cries out and he says, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus is walking along and he stops dead in his tracks. I want you to think about that. When's the last time that Jesus has stopped dead in his tracks for you and me? Because, you know, he is where he is, and life goes on. And Jesus passes by, and what are we doing? What are we crying that all of a sudden he turns and looks your way because you got his attention? Think about that. Oh, you can get his attention. What is it that this man did that got his attention? Well, it's pretty simple. He addressed him in a very unique way. It's a term that's only used twice, as I recall, here in the book of Mark, and it's like Rabboni, it's respect, it's this creator, it is certainly the Son of David. But whatever it was, this man reached out and cried out to Jesus in such a way that it arrested Jesus and it stopped him right in his steps. And he said in verse 48, as we continue on, and many charged him that he should hold his peace. Now, what I find interesting here is human nature. Here are all of his friends saying, hey, shut up! You know, they're going along with Jesus, and they want to go on to the city of Jerusalem. They've got business to take care of. This man cries out. They go, shh, shh, be quiet, be quiet. Let him on his way. But you know what? He still persists. He wouldn't hold his word. He wouldn't hold his peace. But he cried the more a great deal. I sort of envisioned that. That just made him get fired up. Jesus! You know, thou son of David. He just would not shut up. I see a certain amount of zeal involved in that. He said, thou son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus, notice in verse 49, Jesus stops dead in his tracks. He stands still. And this I really like. He says, now listen, go get him. Go get that man. And of course, now the mood in the audience changes. The friends that were along, he said, commanded him to be called, and they called the blind man, saying to him, well, be of good cheer. They gave him, hey, well, this is good. Come on in here now. Be of good cheer. Be of big comfort or good comfort. Rise. He calls you. Well, what a moment that must have been as all the crowd watched and hear this blind. Would he have been dirty, would you think? You know, if you're sitting in the dirt and it's an old dusty road, I would think there's probably the likelihood of that. But Jesus had a way of being drawn to people like that because he could see through the dirt. And he heard an attitude and he sensed a need. It goes on to say here, he casting away his garment, got up and came to Jesus. So apparently this garment that was in front of him that he would have been collecting items on, he got it out of the way so he would not have any kind of a hindrance to him at all. And he then quickly moved toward Jesus. I have wondered if he was totally blind. And I'll tell you why I asked that question. It's because if he had been totally blind, how would he have known exactly where to go to Jesus? But that's just an aside. You know, you can be very, very severely impaired, and maybe you can see images. I don't know. The Bible says that he was blind, and that's good enough. So he casts away his garment, and he gets up, and he came to Jesus, and Jesus answered and said to him, there's that question, that same question asked of the disciples, James and John. He says, what is it that I can do for you? What do you want me to do for you? The blind man said to him, well, what I want you to do is provide me a wife. No, that's not what was important to him. Oh, do you think he probably wanted to have a wife? I guess so. Well, Lord, I need some cash. I need you to solve my financial problems. Do you think that he needed that? Probably. Is it important? Yeah. But you know what was most important? He wanted to see. He wanted his eyesight restored, just like this example that I read to you earlier. He wanted to see. The blind man said to him, Lord, that I may receive my sight. And Jesus said to him, just like that, he said, go your way. Go ahead, you can leave. Your faith has made you whole. And immediately he received his sight. And guess what he did? You know, this is one of the things that's interesting about those who are being called to Christ. When you see, you're supposed to follow. You know, so many people, when they see, they don't follow. It makes me wonder if they really see. Here he finally saw, he had his eyes open, and now he is part of the crowd that's following Jesus on the way to Jerusalem. There's a lesson in there for all of us. When we see, we need to follow as well. In this previous chapter, in Mark chapter 10, over in Mark chapter 9, there's something here that I do want to draw your attention to somewhat quickly. I want to ask you this. Do you and I have enough faith? Well, let me back up. Do you have faith? Well, that's a loaded question, I guess. I assume we do. I've asked that myself this morning of myself, and I assume I have some measure of faith. Do I have all I want? No. Do you? All right, let me back up. Do you have faith? I assume you do. Do we have all that we want? No. Do we have enough? No. You know why I know that? It's because we're not having answered prayers. Let me just call it like it is. And I'm not on anybody. I'm talking to myself as much as anybody else. And it's almost as if we've gotten used to an absence of intervention. Just gotten used to it. Well, it didn't happen this time. It won't happen this time. And that just eats away at your faith. It eats away at mine. But I'm going to try to restore that a little bit today. I'm going to step out somewhat ambitiously here using this example of Bartimaeus, and who just didn't let the moment pass by. And the reason why this is important is something I see here in Mark chapter 9 involving an individual whose son is demon-possessed. It says so in verse 17, "Master, I have brought unto you my son, which has a dumb spirit, and he's eating and tearing and gnashing away, and things aren't good at all." In verse 20, he falls on the ground, he's walling around, he's foaming. He even casts himself into the fire, he hurts himself. Now I want to come down to verse 23, where Jesus said this to him, "If you can believe, all things are possible to him that believes." And I don't know that that includes the ridiculous, and obviously it doesn't. You know, I'm not going to believe in the ridiculous because that's not going to happen. But what about a matter of healing? What about a matter of intervention? That's not unbelievable. What about a matter of believing that a demon could be cast out of this child? Jesus said to him in verse 24, "And straightway the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe, help you my unbelief." And that's what I have for you today. That's what I want you to think about. I want all of us to take seriously this opportunity for a good reason to be sure that we pray that God would help our unbelief. Now, why is this important? Well, for a lot of reasons. Let me tell you one reason why it is very, very important. Is because when you look at this example in Mark 10 that we looked at again, or looked at earlier, you know there's something here that you don't catch right away. Bartimaeus being healed and giving his eyesight. There's something you don't catch. You know what that is? Let me set that up for you again. He's walking along just so quickly, and he calls out to Jesus. Jesus stops and turns to him and heals to him. I want to ask you the question, what if he hadn't have cried out? Do you think he would have had his sight restored? I don't think so. So the opportunity passed so quickly. And this is what's sobering about this example. Jesus never came that way again. Do you know that? He never came that way again. This was it. This is the one chance for Bartimaeus to be healed, to be able to have what he wanted most in life. It came to him one time only. It happened quickly and rapidly, and he had the wherewithal, the zeal and the drive and the stamina and the faith to cry out and say, "Help me, be merciful to me." And Jesus believed him. Jesus stopped. Jesus turned. He healed him, and Jesus went on his way, and it was over. I'm asking you this. How many things do you know about right now in your life that you need to do right now? Because if you don't do it now, the moment passes. It gets beyond you. It will never come back to you again. Just, it's over. When I look at this example of this blind beggar who needed so much in life, I move to understand that what I need to do, and I'm asking you to join me in doing so today, is to do this one thing. Listen to me, please. I want all of us in the Church of God International to spend a little extra time praying that God will add to our faith. When you get on your knees tonight or tomorrow morning, just try to remember this, will you? Because there are people in our audience, people in our congregation, who all they need is you. They need your faith. That's all they're waiting for. Don't miss that opportunity. Don't let that opportunity slide by, because it may never come again. I wonder what's God counting on with us? What can we yet accomplish? Don't become inured and hardened and weakened, as we tend to do because of the absence of miracles in our lives. You know, God can hear our cry, and He can stop, and He can turn around, and He can give us exactly what we want. The reason why this is so important is in the example that I have shown you. And this is what is so sobering. It's so quick, and it's over. It's almost as if He may never pass that way again, so it is now or never. Let's all join together, and let's make it now.